Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. November 5th, Cleveland Cavaliers at home versus the Atlanta Hawks.
Floater missed, Kevin Love. Got tied up, still got the rebound. Missed a jump. From inside, though, by OBJ.
LeBron doing a good job of cleaning up the action. I like the second chance opportunity that Love came up with.
So nice job on that play, but it wasn't a great game for Cavs forward Kevin Love. He was on the floor for 15 minutes in the first half, just 4 points scored. In the third quarter, he left. Post-game recaps, even Love himself the next day said he'd had an illness.
Stomach, shortness of breath, just kind of feeling all out of sorts. Can't truly explain how I felt because I never really felt like that.
Well, this week, Kevin Love opened up about what really happened. He'd had an extreme panic attack, as painful and real as a broken bone. In an essay for the Players Tribune, Love writes that as a boy, he'd learned to play through that pain, be strong, not show his feelings, be a man. But he's talking about it now, and Love has said that he was inspired by Raptors guard DeMar DeRozan's opening up about his depression. We all need to talk more about men and mental health because, amongst the many reasons, suicide deaths and substance abuse rates are highest for men, yet men are far less likely to seek help than women. So this hour on Point, athletes come forward and how the rest of us can break the silence on men's mental health. You can join us on air or online. How does it feel to have a larger-than-life figure, a male athletic figure, talk about anxiety and depression? Have you struggled to talk about your mental health problems? And if you're in the mental health community, what can we do to better the access and the kinds of treatment we offer for men in America? Join us at any time at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We've got a great list of guests who are going to join us today, but let's start with Scooby Axon. He's joining us from New York, and he's a writer for Sports Illustrated. He's also a veteran of the United States Army. In 2008, he was deployed to Iraq, and when he returned, he got a master's degree in psychology, and we have a link to his story, headlined Kevin Love Discusses Panic Attack, Mental Health Issues. That link is at our website, onpointradio.org. Scooby Axon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you. So tell us, I mean, how significant was it that Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan started talking about their mental health challenges?
It's very significant because these are two high-profile athletes, and you just don't hear about these kinds of issues with athletes. And the public perception is these guys make a lot of money. They should be happy. Everything is going fine. But in reality, they're just like us. They go through things on an everyday basis, especially Kevin Love with how his season has gone so far. So when he did leave the game in November, nobody really thought much about it because he played in the very next game. So we kind of just like brushed it aside and didn't think anything of it until he published this essay. And then we really got to the root of the answer of what's going on with him.
Yeah. I mean, in the essay, he writes about how after a timeout in the third quarter, he got to the bench and his heart was racing faster than usual. And he was having trouble catching his breath. And, you know, and by the time they got back onto the court, he was saying he was freaking out and had to leave the court entirely. I mean, he's very raw and honest in how he was feeling. And I think it's that level of honesty that's one of the reasons why the response to him has been so enormous, isn't it?
Yeah, I was actually surprised, especially from fans. Now, I knew the NBA community would have his back, but for the fans to show their support as well, because sometimes fans, you know, they can't have it either way. They either want you to stick to sports and just play your game and don't talk to us about anything else. So I was surprised that the fans actually came forward and supported him in that way as well.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe we saw more than a hint of the fact that fans would be supportive when DeMar DeRozan, you know, he put out that tweet. And his tweet was very, quiet in a way, right?
Yeah, it was at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So you don't know what he's thinking. You don't know where it's coming from. And, you know, he didn't have to explain himself, but he felt the need to explain himself over All-Star weekend, which is ironic because he is from the Los Angeles area. The All-Star game was in L.A. this year. So it was very interesting because most people thought what he tweeted was lyrics to a song. And it turned out to be, you know, anything but.
Yeah, because, I mean, he tweeted that sometimes this depression gets the best of him, better of him. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so talk to me more about how significant it is that players are coming forward now and being so public about their own struggles. And actually, you know, in order to get to that, let me play a little clip here of Kevin Love talking this week. And actually, this is going to be him reading a part of his essay that he posted in the Players' Tribune. And he's describing his struggle with this anxiety attack and how it felt during the game back in November.
In the NBA, you have trained professionals to fine-tune your life in so many areas. But none of those people could help me in the way I needed when I was lying on the floor struggling to breathe. I'm just starting to do the hard work of getting to know myself. For 29 years, I've avoided that. So I did one seemingly little thing that turned out to be a big thing. The Cavs helped me find a therapist, and I set up an appointment.
Scooby Axon, what really gets me about what Kevin Love is saying there is the first part where he says, like, the NBA, like the other major leagues, they have trained professionals that look after these athletes in every way, shape, and form, right? Including, like, mental focus, visualization, sometimes there's even meditation, like, not let alone their physical health. But they had to help him find a therapist outside.
I'm surprised about that. Most teams, you know, will employ a team psychologist to help athletes go through the rigors of a long season, especially in the NBA, where it's 82 games. What's shocking to me was that they had to refer him outside of the team. To get him some help. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the protocol is for teams, especially in the NBA, to have someone on call for all kinds of issues. So that was very surprising to me.
But at least they did get him the help. And he says it's
absolutely
made all the difference in the world. Now, I want to use both Love and DeRozan's sort of speaking out as a way to telescope out a little to men in general. Mm-hmm. Because Kevin Love, you know, he wrote that one of the things that initially had stopped him from seeking help was that he didn't want people to perceive him as less reliable as a teammate, and that it all went back to the playbook of masculinity that he'd learned growing up. Talk to me about that.
Absolutely. When you look at these big, strong athletes, Kevin Love, 6'9", 250 pounds, he is the epitome of strength. So when you look at these guys and they're going through everyday issues that normal human beings are going through, you know, and with him speaking out, it's just going to open the floodgates, in my opinion. Other athletes are going to do interviews and, you know, express themselves about what they are going through because, you know, you can read an interview and you really don't know these athletes. I interview athletes. I really don't know them personally. I don't know what they're going through, you know. So it's really up to them to tell us what's going on so we can put it out there and the public can know and to help people out there. And I think that's what's most important, helping people who are going through this.
Scooby, you served in the United States Army. You were deployed to Iraq as well.
Yes.
I mean, did you see similar struggles? Did you yourself have a struggle like that?
I saw it all. Full disclosure, actually next week I will be going to the VA and I have a mental health appointment myself. I saw things over in Iraq that I don't wish to recall. I had fellow soldiers. We go to war. We go through all the rigors over there, and then they come back home and commit crimes, commit suicide. And I think that's one of the reasons I, you know, came back and really just shut it down for 6 months after I got back and then moved out to Arizona and got a master's degree in psychology and was going to go that route before I got back into journalism.
Wow. Well, Scooby Axon, stand by here for just a second. We got a lot of callers who want to share their stories. So let me get one of them here before the break. Andrew is calling from New Orleans. You're on the air, Andrew.
Hi, Magda. I just want to say I'm a 37-year-old male, and I've struggled with bipolar and anxiety for a long time, diagnosed over 10 years ago. And luckily, I have a supportive family, but in general, it's really hard to be forthcoming with people about it because of the just general expectations that you're weak or, you know, suck it up. And it is really good that people on a higher level, I know Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, had come out not long ago and also said he suffers from depression. So that gives a sense of, you know, we're the middle class and the lower class people, we're not the only ones suffering, that it doesn't matter how much money you make, that there's these challenges that all men typically can face, and just it's tough to admit it. I also really want to say quickly that I believe culturally it's difficult as well. Different cultures, they tend to handle these kind of issues with men in different ways, and I think it can be difficult depending on the culture that you come from.
Andrew, thank you so much for calling and for sharing that. Scooby Axon, can you stand by for just a second, because I want to bring in another voice here before we have to take a quick break. Terry Real.
Absolutely.
Terry Real is a psychotherapist specializing in men's issues, and he's author of I Don't Want to Talk About It, Overcoming the Secret Legacy of Male Depression. And he joins me in the studio. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you very much.
So react to what you heard Scooby and the caller just say about so many barriers that some men feel to seeking help when they need it.
Yeah, I like to say that a man is about as likely to ask for help for a mental health issue as he is to ask for directions. And it's much the same reason. The essence of traditional masculinity is invulnerability. The more invulnerable you are, the more manly you are. And the more vulnerable you are, the more girly you are.
Well, these are very powerful forces, too, because I'm looking at our website right now, and we have a comment on our website from someone who's calling themselves Listener, who says, mental health support? Oh, please. Next, they'll be saying we need to stop and ask for directions. No thanks.
There you go. There you go. I want to congratulate Scooby for being on the air and talking about his own mental health issues. That's no small thing. I had a guy came back from Iraq. He was a Marine, and he clearly had PTSD. He said, we don't get PTSD. We give PTSD.
Hmm. Well, we got to take a quick break here. So Terry Real and Scooby Axon, stand by. We are talking about athletes right now seeming to be leading the way on getting the rest of us to talk about men and mental health. Going to get to a bunch of callers when we come back from this break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This podcast and following message are sponsored by the new CNN original series, Pope, The Most Powerful Man in History, a dramatic new 6-part series narrated by Liam Neeson that links recent news events surrounding the Vatican to their unexpected historical origins in the Catholic Church. From the start of the papacy to struggles with corruption to the challenges faced by wartime popes, go inside the Vatican to explore the roles of popes throughout history and how they spread Catholicism around the world. Pope airs Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern on CNN.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. There are lots of places to debate today's issues if you don't mind getting attacked for speaking your mind or asking a simple question. But 1A is different. You'll find the 1A podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We're talking about men and mental health and athletes speaking out about their mental health challenges. I'm joined today by Scooby Axon. He's writer for Sports Illustrated and also a veteran of the United States Army. We've got a link to his story about Kevin Love discussing his panic attack, and that link is at onpointradio.org. I'm also joined today by Terry Real, a psychotherapist specializing in men's issues. He's author of I Don't Want to Talk About It, Overcoming the Secret Legacy of Male Depression. And Scooby and Terry, let me just play a piece of tape here for you. This is from DeMar DeRozan. Again, we talked before the break about how he had sent out this quiet, cryptic tweet about his struggles with depression. He's with the Raptors, and he told ESPN last month that initially he'd been ashamed to talk about his depression for a long time.
People wonder why I was such a quiet guy, and that was part of it, you know, not wanting to speak out about it and not wanting other people to know exactly what I was going through. But, you know, you get to a certain age, and it's all about helping others. It's not about you just being a selfish person about the things you're going through, other people going through stuff as well.
Terry Real, I think for anyone suffering or struggling with a mental illness, this shame about being public, even amongst your family or friends, is a huge issue, men or women. But is there something particular about American culture that makes it perhaps even more difficult for men?
Yes, I think that's part of the reason why we think of depression as a woman's disease. A lot of men don't come forward. And I want to say that Depression is one of psychiatry's great success stories. 90% of people who get help report substantial relief, but men don't seek help. They have what I call a double shame, compound shame. There's the stigma of the depression, and then there's the stigma of unmanliness, of being brought down, and being brought down specifically by an emotion. You know, men are not supposed to be vulnerable to their emotions. And admitting that you have depression is both dealing with the stigma of a mental disorder and also dealing with a sense of unmanliness.
Scooby, you have a thought about that?
Yeah, I look at it from a different perspective. With me, especially being in the military and fighting wars and things of that nature, I don't think anybody has questioned me as a man or not being manly. It's just, you know, we see things overseas that we're not supposed to see. I mean, it is war, but some of the things you just can't believe you just saw that. And so when I went into the doctor 3 weeks ago for an annual physical, and the doctor is asking me all these questions, are you sleeping okay? And the answer is no. I've had insomnia for 20 years, and I never thought that I had any kind of mental health issues. And the doctor's like, hold on right there. You need to come see me. You need to make an appointment. So I didn't know about these things, you know, that I just thought, well, I can't go to sleep. You know, I get 4 or 5 hours of sleep. I go about my day. I do my work, come back home. You know, it's the same cycle over and over.
Is that because we don't talk to men at a young age that those particular symptoms might mean something about your mental health? Whereas, I don't know. Do we talk to women about that more?
We don't talk to our boys about emotions in general. The research tells us that boys shut down expression of their emotions. They still feel, but they don't say that they feel at 3, 4, 5 years old. Before our kids have learned to read, they've already read the code of masculinity. And that code is be tough, be stoic, take care of it yourself, be in charge, and don't be weak.
Yeah. Scooby Axon, just to take it back to the NBA here for just a second, because this week Kevin Love was talking about the enormous response, a huge response that he got from talking about his anxiety attack, and that he had put out a tweet asking people to email him their stories. And within a day, he got 4,000 emails that he and a whole staff are still trying to get through. So it seems as if right now there's a lot of support. But I have this comment on the On Point website from someone calling themselves Finance Phil. And Finance Phil is saying, as long as Kevin Love produces, he'll be supported. When he's no longer an asset on the court, he'll have to pay a price. I'm cynical. Finance Phil says, ask Delonte West how his struggles with bipolar disorder fared after he left the NBA.
Now, again, this is one of those, I guess, fans that wants to have it his way, you know, either whether he's a Cavaliers fan or just a fan of the NBA in general. What do you want? Do you want him to produce and have his mental capacities all the time? You know, that's just not being realistic. So fans will say, well, as long as he's producing, as long as the team is winning, I don't care about anything else these athletes are going through. So I think the fans, you know, they're kind of short-sighted in that sense if they do believe that. You just can't have it both ways. You know, you can't say you care about the team and not care about the athlete.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of callers here who want to join us, so let me make some space for some of them. Mark is calling from Miami, Florida. You're on the air, Mark.
Thank you. I wanted to bring up something that hasn't been touched upon yet. First of all, I race motorcycles, and I have a friend that passed away a couple of years ago. He had had a particularly painful injury that necessitated painkillers. Painkillers, basically, he became, addicted to them, and over the years had other injuries as we have normally. And eventually, he succumbed to something. I don't want to get into the absolute details, but he passed away. One of the things that became very apparent to me, just from that experience, seeing that from the outside, and my own experience that can lend to this issue beyond machismo, is our identities are intricately and deeply intertwined with the sport that we do.
Mm-hmm.
and anything that could possibly or perceivably get in the way of us being that person, or worse, being able to continue to participate, is not tolerated.
Yeah.
And asking for help can certainly present that, real or imagined.
Right. Mark, thank you so much for your call. Scooby Axon, I think Mark's bringing up a really important point. Are we maybe seeing, are we on the beginnings of seeing a change, though, in that sort of absolute identity that Mark was talking about?
Yeah, especially, you know, with the military and with professional sports. I think in the military, we don't perceive it as being weak. We perceive it as, if you have a problem, you better tell us, because your actions can get somebody killed on the battlefield. And that's all we're trying to do, is get you the help that you need. Now, after, you know, you tell someone your problems, there's, you know, maybe a mix up in when you receive help. And that's an issue for another day with the VA. But while we're there, while we're fighting, it's imperative that, you know, it's drilled in us every single day.
Yeah.
If you have something that you need to talk about, you better tell us today, because we don't want to find out after the fact that, you know, this guy had issues and ended up doing something to hurt his family, yeah, or to hurt his fellow comrades.
So Terry, real though, I mean, the military may be doing this, as Scooby rightly points out. But are we having that enough of that similar shift elsewhere, though, in society?
Well, I think that's why Kevin Love's column was so revolutionary and so welcome. I think what's embedded in that column is a new definition of what strength is, which is what I teach my clients. Strength is not having no vulnerability. That's a lie. That's not being human. Strength is knowing what your vulnerabilities are and dealing with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a new definition of courage that's coming out right now as we're speaking.
Let's take another call. Dee is calling from Niagara Falls, New York. You're on the air, Dee.
Hi, Magda. I've been suffering with depression for a while. I had a bad back injury, and I was an athlete, you know, and not being able to do some of the things I used to do kind of put me in a depressive, you know, state, along with other things that happened in the past. Me being an African-American male, I'm a single father, an autistic son, kind of forced me into talking to somebody and getting some help and putting things out on the table so I could actually deal with my son and his issues and people around me. And that's helped out a bit as far as my relationships, whether it be my job or whether it be with my kids and so on. But it was very hard to do, well, first because of the whole no insurance thing, but also just having to admit that there's definitely a problem. Everybody was telling me there was a problem with me, and now that I'm able to look at things kind of more focused, I see there was some issues and things that I needed to change.
Yeah, Dee, can I just jump in here? Because I'm sorry to interrupt you, Dee, but you said something really important about, like, no insurance being a major obstacle here. We've got folks commenting on the website to the same effect, saying, you know, insurance plans that don't cover mental health aren't going to help this issue. But Dee, before I let you go, what did get you to the point where you had to start talking about it and reached out for help, and what kind of help did you get?
Well, I talked to a psychologist, and what triggered that was watching my son responding to how, you know, I was acting, and then he started to act somewhat in the same way, and I didn't want that to happen. So I talked to a psychologist, and my insurance ran out, so I stopped getting the help I need, and now I got a job with insurance, so I was able to go back and continue the help I needed. So that's what triggered it, though. Mm-hmm. It was my son. I didn't want him to, you know, fall prey to the same thing that I was falling prey to.
Right. Dee, thank you so very much for your call. Okay, so Dee's call, and Scooby and Terry, you've also both touched on this as well, that, you know, if we're really going to change how we view mental health, men and mental health, we got to start young, right? So let me introduce another voice in the conversation. Dr. Michael Thompson joins us now. He's a clinical psychologist and co-author of the book Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys. Dr. Thompson, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magda. Thanks.
It's good to have you. So, you know, you've been thinking about this issue for young boys for years now. Does it seem as if have we made significant progress in talking about mental health or emotional health in young boys, or do we still have a long, long way to go?
Well, you're talking to a mental health professional. I've been trying. I work at an all-boys school of 440 boys, and it's a very athletically oriented school, really a powerhouse. And we get boys who have anxiety attacks every year. We get boys who develop depression, sometimes after injuries. But the injured or the anxious athlete is not new to me. And one thing I want to mention about Kevin Love's wonderful essay is that he talks about having family problems. There he was on the court playing, but his family issues are in his mind. Right. Well, everybody has family issues at one time or another. You again, like Terry Real says, if you don't have family issues, you're probably not human. But the question is, does a boy know that there's a place he can go to talk about family issues? I've run with the counselor at Belmont Hill a group we call a family group, which really means family trouble group. And if boys sit around and talk about family issues and you get a high status boy, an athlete who opens up about his issues and maybe about his anxiety, the other boys will follow him right away. They will also open up because they've seen it modeled by, a really respected athlete. Mm-hmm. And what I love about Kevin Love is that he opens the door for boys who think you have to be strong, but you also have to be perfect or stoical. No, Kevin says, yeah, I can be a gifted basketball player and still have family issues.
Yeah. Dr. Thompson and Scooby and Terry, based on what you were just saying, Dr. Thompson, there's something I want to get all of your opinions on. And that is, I'm wondering, Dr. Thompson, you were just talking about how when one boy starts being more frank and allowing himself to be vulnerable about these things, it sort of encourages the same in others. But if we look at the American Psychological Association, though, I think I was looking at, they have guidelines for the treatments of different groups, ethnic guidelines, linguistic, culturally diverse populations, LGBTQ, and even, guidelines for treating women and girls. But there are no specific guidelines for the treatment yet, as I could find, for men and boys. I mean, so in terms of the community of care providers here, do they not have enough of the right kind of tools to start doing this work for men who are seeking help? Dr. Thompson, what's your thought about that?
Look, the one-on-one model with the therapist staring into the eye of a boy and saying, what's wrong, makes so many boys feel uncomfortable and feel weak. So they avoid it. And they don't want to go into therapy and be exposed. They think I'm going to feel worse than if they just hold on to it tightly. So what you need, what I've found in my work is that working with boys in groups has been very helpful because they bolster each other and support each other and model for each other. And I think we've got to experiment with different ways of talking to boys. I was at summer camp and the counselors would talk to boys at night in the bunk room. And they'd turn out all the lights, just have one candle, and boys will talk when there isn't a light right on their face, you know?
Well, Scooby Axon, jump in here, because I wonder, I mean, there are social settings, there are social groups. I mean, you could make the argument that a professional athletic team is a group of men who work so closely together that maybe they ought to have relationships where they can talk to mm-hmm. each other. I mean, are those places like that men can use? What do you think?
Well, as far as professional athletes and teams are concerned, these guys are around each other all the time. And it's interesting. When you hear something in the news concerning something about a team meeting, it's usually issues within the team. The guys are not talking – they're talking about their feelings, but in regards to the team. And so, like I said, it goes back to getting these professionals in these professional teams on an everyday basis. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that, the NBA or the NFL is at fault for this, but most teams do have a professional, and I'm not sure if they're around the team every day or going with them on road trips and things of that nature. That would help in this sense. But as far as Kevin Love is concerned, you're going to see a lot more people come out of the woodwork and discussing their feelings.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Love, these are all stars. These are high profile players. And so people are going to listen to what they have to say. And the response has been overwhelming.
Right. Terry Real, we've just got a minute here before the break. Throw in your thoughts here, because I was interested in what you make of Dr. Thompson saying he sort of leads groups a little differently when it's all boys.
Yeah, I think it's time to expand the network of who we think is resources. One of the things that I was thinking sitting here is we haven't mentioned women at all. And women can be a powerful resource to a man struggling with some of these issues. A lot of the men I see are what I call wife-mandated referrals. And women can be empowered to empower their men to seek help in these circumstances.
Huh. I've also been reading how some therapists are reporting that when they offer specific and achievable goals to the people, the men who come see them, that that helps as well, rather than seeing it being an open-ended process with no definable goal. This is so fascinating. Scooby Axon, Terry Real, and Dr. Michael Thompson, stand by. We're talking about men and mental health and athletes leading the way on that conversation right now. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We're talking about men and mental health. And right now, it's kind of top of mind for a lot of folks because some athletes, some big-name athletes, are leading the way in opening up about their personal struggles. And, you know, if you're a little dubious about this, here's a couple of statistics. Men complete suicide at more than three times the rate of women. And the National Institute of Mental Health reports that men are more likely than women to use almost all types of illicit drugs, and illicit drug use is more likely to result in emergency room visits or overdose deaths for men than for women. So we've been talking this hour about sort of how to create more spaces, more access, just more willingness for men to take those first steps and talk about things they're struggling with. And to that end, here's a little bit of tape. It's really interesting. This is Tom Chapman. He's a barber based in Torquay, England. So we've got an international perspective here. And he founded the Lions Barber Collective, an international group of haircutters that are trying to prevent suicide by turning the barbershop into more of a place where more men can talk about mental health. And here he is speaking to the UK's Channel 4 back in 2016.
That connection between the barber and the client is very strong and very friendly, and it's a very masculine kind of environment, but you've got that relationship there, it's close enough, and that level of trust to actually talk about your feelings. So if we can be that stepping stone to be able to get the person from the chair to go and seek the counselling or medical advice or medication or whatever it is they need.
So that's a perspective from the UK. I'm joined this hour by Scooby Axon, writer for Sports Illustrated, by Terry Real, author of I Don't Want to Talk About It, Overcoming the Secret Legacy of Male Depression, and by Dr. Michael Thompson, co-author of Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys. Tons of callers, so let's see if I can get as many of them in as possible. Joan is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Joan.
Hi, Meghna. I have a son who's been dealing with anxiety and depression, panic attacks. He's 19 and in college, and he plays sports, but he doesn't want anybody at school to know any of this because of that stigma.
Mm. Joan, thank you for your call. Terry Real, what would you tell Joan?
I have a saying: when I'm dealing with a woman in trouble, I empower the woman. When I'm dealing with a man in trouble, I often empower the woman. I would ask Joan to stand firm with her son. Really talk about what that stigma is to him and be as lovingly insistent as she can be as a mom to say, look, you need help. This is not, you know, if his teeth were falling out, if his heart was irregular, she would stand up and say, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get you the help. And I encourage wives, mothers, sisters to stand up and really be empowered when dealing with this issue with men.
Yeah. Scooby Axon, I think Terry Real just said something which has come up over and over and over again in terms of the men who are coming forward and talking about this, and that is people will seek help when they break a bone, when you know when they're sick, when they have illnesses in other ways. But so it's just once they realize that it's a natural next step to say, well, why wouldn't I seek help for some mental illness challenge or personal struggle like that?
I think it goes to a point where, you know, you break a bone, you want to get it fixed so you can get back out there and help your team.
Yeah.
When it comes to mental health, you want to shy away from it and say, well, I don't know what my teammates would think about it. And it's the same thing in the military. You know, I'm sure thinking about my time in Iraq, I missed some signs of my comrades that were going through it. But the one time I did catch the signs, I took the steps necessary in order to get him help. I took away his weapon. I got the leadership involved. We got him to a psychologist there in Iraq, and it was up to the psychologist to determine whether that soldier got his weapon mm-hmm. back and can return to serving his tour.
Yeah.
So, you know, it goes back to just watching people and seeing how they're doing, asking questions, and just telling them, look, you're not weak for this. You know, we all go through it, and trying to drill that in their head can go a long way.
But isn't that exactly the thing, though, right? Because we talk about men oftentimes, and, you know, women too, but this is really, I think, hits home for men. Or at least the men who tell me this, I'm not speaking for men here, but that like there's this call for mental toughness, right? Like you've got to be mentally tough. But you know, we don't tell our bones, you got to be tough. You're broken. Just deal with it, right? So mental toughness, it's a self-defeating attitude, right? Because you got to be mentally strong in order to do your jobs, in order to mm-hmm. play on the basketball court, just serve in the military, or do in any sphere of life. So toughness doesn't mean not seeking help is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Like you hit it right on the head. Like you said, when, you know, certain jobs, you know, are perceived to be tough, you know, football players, wrestlers, people in the military, you just expect, especially coming from men, that they're going to be tough. They're going to get the job done. But you don't know what stresses those people are going through, especially in the military, especially you're playing high-profile sports. You're on TV every night. You're vying for a championship. And that's all fans see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't care how they get to the championship. They just want their team to get there.
Yeah.
No matter what happens.
So, Dr. Michael Thompson, how do we counter or balance the mental toughness messages that men get as young boys?
Well, I'm going to go back to Joan for a second, because I might say to her, if you can persuade your son just to tell one of his friends in college what he's struggling with, when he doesn't lose the respect and love of his friend, and in fact, maybe the friend then opens up to him more and he knows he's not alone. What happens to boys and young men who close up as they get so isolated, and they're afraid that somehow weakness is contagious, that or that it will make them feel more shame. And if you can get them to tell somebody, that can be the road back towards health and professional help in the military. Scooby says you take their gun away and say you're going to a psychologist. It's hard to do that with a college student.
Yeah. Let's take more calls here. Tommy's calling from Richmond, Virginia. You're on the air, Tommy.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call. I developed an eating disorder in college, not extremely severe, but it definitely interfered with my life. And I found that I didn't have the guts to speak with my male friends about this problem because there were no outward symptoms. It didn't express outwardly. I figured, you know, this isn't really me. It's just something I'm doing. But much like other kinds of mental illness, it was sort of a dramatic change in my psychology when I would get into these like manic sort of moods. And I started talking to women about it, my female friends, and trans people as well, all kinds of people, and found that maybe half of all of my female friends had gone through some kind of eating disorder, some to the point of nearly dying. And to speak with them made it more real for me, because even though I couldn't see it, I could see them in my place and sort of feel more empathy. So I would say while dialogue between men is important, I just think generally, like the speaker said, any dialogue is important. Mm-hmm. I wish I could go back in time and tell. And I've never even said this publicly. My parents don't know. So the long story short is that being open to each other and just having real conversations in everyday life, you'll find that you have a lot more in common. All kinds of people are suffering from things. And when we speak about them, we make them real and we can, create a dialogue. So yeah. Thank you for taking my call.
Tommy, thank you so much for sharing your story as well. Terry Realt, I think Tommy, what interested me about what he said was that when he opened up to women he knew, it became easier to talk about because there was a commonality of experience there.
Well, and also women are easier to talk to. Yeah. Women are certainly easier to talk to about emotions or vulnerability. And they can be a tremendous resource to us guys. It's not just guys reaching out to guys, but guys reaching out to women. And women, one of the callers said that he sought help for depression when he got the message from the people around him that he needed help. And women can play a really vital role in helping men see that they've crossed the line and that they need help.
Yeah. So, I also want to just make a point here because this hour, the lens of this hour has been because through the openness and writings of some major athletes, right? And Scooby, because of your experience in the military, we've also talked a lot about soldiers and mental health. But I just want to be clear, like we're talking about really all men, and no matter what sphere of life you're from, the challenges that men may face when it comes to mental health struggles and seeking help. And Dr. Michael Thompson, to that end, like it doesn't seem to me that the challenges are any easier if you're out of the limelight or out of the line of fire. That this is something that many men from all walks of life deal with.
Of course, the World Health Organization estimates that 17% of a population is struggling with some sort of mental health issue that's serious enough to have a name. So that's 17% of people. Now, some people get over it, but then other people develop them. So over the course of a lifetime, a lot of the people you know are going to have issues. A lot of students in college are going to have friends with eating disorders or depressed. And of course, this affects women and men in equal measure. So one of the things we'd have to do is train both boys and girls to know that this is a part of life mm-hmm. and that there's steps you can take when it happens to you or those close to you.
James is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. You're on the air, James.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to bring up an issue. I was a paramedic firefighter for 13 years, and I eventually got out after being diagnosed with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And for me, it took two of my fellow firefighters actually committing suicide before I was able to grasp and realize that there was something wrong with me. Mm. And that has been a very long struggle. It's been several years now since I've been out of the fire department, but with a lot of therapy, things have gotten a lot better. I mean, I'm still not to where I would like to be, but it's something that I don't think a lot of people necessarily think of, that our emergency responders are struggling every single day.
Yeah.
Because they have to see the worst of humanity mm-hmm. every time they go into work.
James, thank you so much for calling and for sharing what you've been through. I really appreciate it. And Scooby Axon, I mean, it sounds a lot like what you were talking about earlier.
Absolutely. They said he sees the rigors of going to his job every day as a paramedic. It was the same way overseas. You see these guys every day. You go through it. Different guys had different missions. So, they come back in and talk about what they saw and then leave it at that.
Yeah.
And for us, to go through it every day and then to come home, we make it out. We make it out alive, and then to come home and hear about two of your guys going home and committing suicide and other things. It was a sense of guilt, like what could I have done to prevent this?
Right.
So, again, that's another a layer to the whole discussion, mm-hmm. Feeling guilty about things you've seen or things you thought you could have prevented.
Yeah. Scooby, Terry, and Dr. Thompson here. There's an interesting comment that came in to our website from someone who's calling themselves Thinkin' 15. And they write that men ignoring their problems and depression have a big effect on the people close to them. It ripples through families and relationships. And I think it's a really astute observation, but perhaps also a springboard to how we might encourage more men to come forward, right? So maybe if we, is it useful to talk to men about, don't just think about yourselves, think about the effect that you're having on those around you, who you care about, your coworkers, your loved ones, your kids, Dr. Thompson?
Absolutely. I once saw a training video for family therapists, and it was a professional athlete who was sent by the courts because he'd been involved in domestic battery. And the therapist helped him see that it was his wife's anxiety that triggered his anxiety, which he experienced as suddenly he was afraid. And then he said, in this wonderful moment, "I'm afraid of being afraid." And he thought it would totally weaken him as a man, and that's when he hit his wife. So when men can't identify their feelings, when they have no sort of conversation with their inner life, they can become a danger to people in their own family. So that's why we have to produce emotionally literate boys and emotionally literate men. Whether you call it social-emotional learning in school or whatever, it takes some practice to be able to know what your feelings are, to identify them, and then to be comfortable enough with them so you don't rage at other people because you're having them.
Yeah. Terry Real?
Well, I think that we need nothing less than a new definition of masculinity itself. I think that the idea that we need to be perfect, we need to be strong, that we have no vulnerabilities is a lie. And what you're seeing is a lot of men hung up on that lie, where on the one hand, their vulnerabilities are irrefutable and in need of help. And on the other hand, they're in denial of those vulnerabilities. The cost of that, I agree with Dr. Thompson, it's not just that men hurt themselves. We know from research that girls and women tend to internalize the stress. Men tend to act it out. And drinking, drugs, domestic violence, violence of all sorts, that has been a male domain. And I think the core of it is a kind of pain that goes unrecognized and unhelped.
Would it help if, in a very practical sense, if we even talked about therapy in a different way and just change the language around it, you know, saying like instead of getting therapy, you're getting coaching, training? I don't say that facetiously.
I did work with an NFL player and he called me his life coach. And I'm happy to be called a coach instead of a therapist. I do know that men tend to respond better to something direct than traditional psychotherapy.
Well, Terry Real is a psychotherapist specializing in men's issues, and he's author of I Don't Want to Talk About It, Overcoming the Secret Legacy of Male Depression. Thank you so much for coming today and helping us have this discussion, Terry Real.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Michael Thompson, co-author of Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Thompson. Thank you.
Thanks, Magna.
And Scooby Axon, writer for Sports Illustrated, veteran of the United States military. We've got a link to his story about Kevin Love. It's at onpointradio.org. Scooby, it's been an absolute joy to hear you and to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for all you listeners who shared your stories with us, I deeply appreciate it. Keep doing it online at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Thanks for listening. This is On Point.